Today is Tuesday, March 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up...
Two big issues really have overshadowed the visit by the Chinese president to France.
That's reporter Catherine Field. We'll have the latest on the Chinese president's visit to France. Also ahead, Israeli warplanes carried out airstrikes in the Gaza Strip early today. And a regional election observation group criticizes Sunday's general election in Thailand as deeply flawed. It's all on today's International Edition. Israeli warplanes carried out airstrikes in the Gaza Strip early today, while Israel's military reported continued rocket fire from the Palestinian territory. The violence that sparked yesterday with a rocket attack from Gaza that wounded seven people in a house north of Tel Aviv stretched into a second day, despite an announcement by Palestinian officials of an Egyptian-mediated ceasefire. Last night, Israeli airstrikes hit dozens of targets across the Gaza Strip, including the office of the leader of the militant group Hamas. There were no immediate reports of casualties from the airstrikes. Chinese President Xi Jinping is in Paris for day two of his state visit to France, ahead of talks on trade, multilateralism, and security in the Sahel. French President Emmanuel Macron is keen to get China to contribute and help bolster the G5 Sahel joint military force. The other big focus of the visit is on multilateralism. In addition, British lawmakers voted late yesterday to take control of Brexit from Prime Minister Theresa May. I spoke with reporter Catherine Field on President Xi's visit to France and the latest Brexit developments.
Two big issues really have overshadowed the visit by the Chinese president to France. One has been multilateralism. This is the real buzzword of the moment. As the European Union has seen America taking its own foreign policy route, and as Britain is moving away from the European Union, the buzzword is really multilateralism. And it's multilateralism looking at issues such as the Iran nuclear deal, the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, security in Africa. These are the issues that President Macron and President Xi were talking about very clearly, that there needs to be more respect for multilateralism and working together. As well, both Macron and Xi brought up climate change, both of them saying that this 2020 deadline for coming up with the way forward for climate policy has to be adhered to. The other buzzword is reciprocity. It needs to be on trade. Everyone's talking about this Silk Road coming through from China or across Europe and down into Africa. Well, the buzzword is that road's got to be going in two directions. It can't just be China using it to bring money, investment, and its own workforce into these new markets. It has to be a road where there is European goods traveling to for sale in Chinese markets. So those are really the two big issues.
Also, I know France would like to see China play more of a military role in the G5 Sahel joint military force. So what is China's stand on this?
Well, China does have an increased military presence in Africa, and that dates back to 2015 when China changed its laws, which allowed overseas deployment of the People's Liberation Army and its security forces. So we've already seen Chinese troops protecting Chinese infrastructure projects in places like Cameroon, Gabon, and Ghana. And we're also seeing Chinese soldiers taking part in the UN-led peacekeeping operation in Mali. So what the French are hoping is that not just on matters of security engagement, but the Chinese also get involved in combating terrorism and piracy in the area. And particularly, they want more help on that G5 Sahel. Now, it hasn't come about as yet. It's really been a very slow movement towards getting China to look at its role in Africa as a proper role and not just as a country going in there building infrastructure projects and getting its business in there, but looking at it as an engagement in the country and playing a role in making sure that not just that these infrastructure projects are built, but that also some of the other issues which are really dogging the African continent and Europeanized, at least, that is terrorism, piracy, and migration, that they're dealt with as well. And because Europe really does feel that China now, if it wants to be an international player, it has to step up and deal with these other security issues.
Among the many topics that are being discussed there in France, Brexit, I'm sure, has been a topic that's come up on the table. So what are the leaders there saying about Brexit, and especially in light of last night where British lawmakers voted to take control of Brexit from Prime Minister Theresa May?
You can really feel it in everything that happens in Europe at the moment, that particularly with the EU, this meeting today in Paris was meant to be a precursor to a very important EU-China summit that's going to happen in Brussels next month. The fact is that at the back of everyone's mind is Brexit. What is happening in the UK? What's happening in the Houses of Parliament in London? And there is a sort of scratching of the head and thinking, well, how are we going to be able to move forward when it's still not clear what the United Kingdom is doing? And today, in particular, sort of behind the scenes, people are briefing journalists that this is a particular forum that the Brits should be there, that the United Kingdom, Britain, is a member of the Security Council. It's a permanent member of the Security Council. It has military presence around the world. That this is exactly the sort of forum that it should be taking part in. But because it's so bound up in Brexit, it's just unable to play a role at the top table when it comes to international commerce and international security.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She spoke with me from Paris. Among the top stories in the world, Myanmar's Supreme Court agrees to rule on an appeal by two Reuters journalists who have been sentenced to 7 years for their news coverage of Myanmar's violent suppression of Rohingya Muslims. Pakistan's Supreme Court allows ailing former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif to be released from jail for 6 weeks on medical grounds, and the U.S. House of Representatives is scheduled to vote today on whether to override President Donald Trump's veto of legislation that would void his declaration of a national emergency at the nation's southern border. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
When NASA's Voyager 2 visited Neptune in 1989, scientists noticed immense dark storms swirling in its atmosphere. Some liken Neptune storms, called great dark spots, to Jupiter's great red spot. Since Voyager's visit, only the Hubble Space Telescope has had the ability to spot and track the mysterious storms. A group of planetary scientists say their recent analysis of a series of photos of Neptune taken by Hubble over the past several years is the first to record the birth and growth of a great dark spot, which was first seen in 2018. Scientists say the storms that make up Neptune's great dark spots form from areas of high atmospheric pressure. Storms on Earth, however, form around areas of low pressure. A study detailing the scientists' findings have been published in the journal Geophysical Letters. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
U.S. President Donald Trump is wasting little time going on the offensive after his attorney general declared he did not commit a crime. According to the two-year investigation by a special counsel into his 2016 campaign's alleged ties to Russia. More from VOA's White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman.
An emboldened President Trump is suggesting there could have been treasonous intent by some of those who were trying to link his election campaign to Moscow, and that now needs to be looked at.
It was a false narrative. It was a terrible thing. We can never let this happen to another president again.
The report compiled by Special Counsel Robert Mueller is still secret, but Democrats in Congress are vowing to ensure it is made public as soon as possible. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
A regional election observation group is criticizing the initial results from Sunday's general election in Thailand as deeply flawed. Preliminary results released yesterday by the country's election commission show the military-backed Pralong Pa Chanrot was leading in the ballot counting, but the populist Phu Thai is leading in the number of parliamentary seats with 137 versus 97 seats. The commission blames the confusing and contradictory results on human error. The Asian Network for Free Elections issued a statement today calling the inaccurate results have damaged the perceived integrity of the general election. VOA's Ira Melman spoke with Ian Bard of the Center for Southeast Asia Studies at the University of Wisconsin about the mixed opinions of the 52 million Thais that voted.
There are people that are making various allegations about whether there has been some interference in the vote, you know, double voting or things like this. The turnout seems to be a lot lower than people expected, which also has raised some questions. These are just allegations at this point, and it's hard to know how much truth is in them. It's still going to take a long time for them to figure out the party vote proportion of the seats. That won't be announced until early May. So there's a lot of speculation right now and uncertainty. It would appear that, you know, on the one hand, the military party has a great advantage because they start off with 250 seats, presumably coming from the unelected members. However, they may require to have a coalition partner, and at this point it's not clear who that might be or if any of the other parties are willing to enter into a coalition with the pro-military party.
What are the problems associated with the military party not winning?
I think either way, there is still going to be a lot of polarizing factors in Thai politics, right? Because the constitution of Thailand is set up in such a way now that it's not really a fully democratic system, because you have one-third of the seats are now given to the military to appoint. So this is a very uncertain situation right now, because it seems that the same sort of divisions that have been plaguing Thailand for many years are continuing.
There have been some suggestions and some predictions that this might lead to a stronger military takeover, maybe even a violent coup. Have you come to that same conclusion?
I would not say that at this point. You know, there have been some speculation on that front, but I don't think there's enough evidence at this point to say that that is a likely scenario. It really depends on how things play out in the next days and even weeks, because even the Pura Thai party may only have, you know, 37% of the elected seats, not including the non-elected ones, of the 500 seats that are elected. So that being the case, they're also going to have coalition partners if they were to try to form a government.
That was Ian Bard of the Center for Southeast Asia Studies at the University of Wisconsin speaking with VOA's Ira Melman. Well, the World Health Organization hails India's landmark achievement of ridding the country of the crippling polio virus. Tomorrow, the WHO says India's 1.3 billion people and the entire WHO Southeast Asia region will celebrate 5 years of being polio-free. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization says 12 years ago, India alone was responsible for almost 70% of all polio cases around the world. It calls India's success against polio one of the most significant achievements in public health. WHO officials say India's accomplishment proves the crippling disease can be eliminated in even the most challenging circumstances with a strong political commitment. The number of polio cases has decreased from an estimated 350,000 a year to 33 since the WHO launched its global eradication campaign in 1988. WHO spokesman Christian Lindemeyer tells VOA polio remains endemic in only three countries in two of the organization's six regions. He identifies the countries as Nigeria in the African region and Pakistan and Afghanistan in the eastern Mediterranean region.
There has been no wild poliovirus detected in Africa since 2016, and we are cautiously optimistic that AFRO, so our African region, is on the path to certification as well. EMRO, our Eastern Mediterranean region, has only those two countries which have never stopped polio, unfortunately, Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Lindemeyer says the countries are considered a joint reservoir of the virus. Therefore, he says both are getting most of the focus and support from the WHO's polio eradication program. He says tailored and innovative tactics are being put in place to deal with the challenges in each country. The strategies include identifying, tracking, and vaccinating migrant and hard-to-reach populations. He says community workers will be trained to go door-to-door to hunt down children who haven't been vaccinated and immunize them against polio. The World Health Organization notes the polio virus does not respect borders. It says polio will not be eradicated until every last child is protected. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is VOA's International Edition.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Cyclone Idai battered parts of southern Africa, wreaking havoc and creating a massive humanitarian crisis. An in-depth look at how the international community and the local governments are dealing with this evolving crisis on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is James Butty, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa right here on VOA Africa.
This is VOA's International Edition. While millions of people live with the constant pain of fibromyalgia, it's a disorder that's often misdiagnosed, and while lab tests can help identify a lot of diseases, until recently there was no test for fibromyalgia. Now, as VOA's Carol Pearson reports, a simple blood test could finally give these patients scientific proof of their condition.
Barb Hartong suffered unexplained full body pain before she was diagnosed with fibromyalgia.
It was almost a relief because I finally knew what was wrong with me.
Fibromyalgia is a disorder with symptoms of widespread pain accompanied by fatigue and problems with sleep, memory, and mood. Researchers believe with fibromyalgia, the brain magnifies signals of pain. About 75% of those who suffer from fibromyalgia are undiagnosed. Some people live with pain for years. Many receive treatment that's ineffective or even harmful.
Many of the patients with chronic opiate use turn out to have underlying fibromyalgia. So in fact, if that was recognized, then we could realize that we could stem the tide of treating them inappropriately with opiates.
Researchers at the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center have developed a simple blood test that could diagnose fibromyalgia.
We use near-infrared in many companies to determine protein, fat, moisture, starch levels, fiber in seconds.
Researchers found that this test can analyze levels of chemicals in the blood the same way it analyzes molecules in food. The test can distinguish fibromyalgia from other chronic pain conditions with nearly 100% accuracy.
The brown colored squares, these belong to the fibromyalgia. The red ones are rheumatoid arthritis, and the green ones are lupus.
A test like this provides confirmation and validation of the symptoms that they've been suffering from for years.
While there's no cure for fibromyalgia, medication, exercise, and stress reduction measures can help control symptoms. Barb Hartong takes medication and sticks to a daily routine.
And it's not just giving me a pill, it's how do I live? And for me, it's exercise.
Researchers now want to use the test on a larger group of patients with the hope of getting it out of the lab and into the exam room where doctors could diagnose fibromyalgia instantly. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Mozambique's President Filipe Nyusi is warning countries ravaged by Cyclone Idai could face more flooding. The cyclone's heavy rains, which killed at least 750 people in Mozambique and neighboring Malawi and Zimbabwe, have also pushed dam retention levels to near maximums. Yannick Michel reports for VOA from Maputo.
Mozambique says after heavy rains from Cyclone Idai, the water level behind the Cahora-Bassa Dam, the fourth largest in Africa, is above recommended levels, raising the possibility that a discharge might be required to relieve growing pressure. In addition to Cahora-Bassa, there are concerns about dams in neighboring countries such as Shagwa in Malawi and Kariba in Zimbabwe that are also close to their maximum capacity. A large release of water could worsen the already dire situation for many downstream. We were hammered earlier this month by the cyclone. Nyusi says evacuations are needed as he fears the structural integrity of the dams could be a problem if water pressure grows. He says with the forecast of rainfall until April, there may be a need for a discharge, worsening the flooding. Therefore, says Nyusi, there's an urgent need to evacuate populations from risk areas until the situation stabilizes. The Red Cross says Cyclone Idai has made 400,000 people homeless in Mozambique. On Monday, Mozambique's Land and Environment Minister said 128,000 are living in makeshift camps. The National Election Commission has postponed Mozambique electoral census scheduled for April 1st, which could see general elections on October 15 delayed. Election Commission spokesman Paulo Quinica says the date for a new census and any election postponement have yet to be decided. But Quinica says he guarantees that general elections will take place in 2019. The international community has donated more than $70 million for Mozambique's cyclone relief, including $6.5 million pledged by the U.S. Department of Defense. Authorities and donors announced a joint commission to manage the funds and make sure they get to those most in need. Yannick Michel for VOA News, Maputo.
Well, thousands of bird lovers are flocking to the central U.S. state of Nebraska this month to see the yearly phenomenon of migrating sandhill cranes. The birds gather on the wide, shallow Platte River to rest and feed on their way north. VOA's Marissa Melton has the story.
The cranes start coming in late February, and they keep coming until early April. Last year, a record 1 million cranes, an estimated 85% of the world's population, visited Nebraska on their way north. The birds are coming from the south, Mexico, as well as Texas and New Mexico. They're on their way to Canada and Alaska and Siberia. In Nebraska, they find a safe place to roost for a couple of weeks and to fuel up for the rest of the trip. Bryce Crone of the Crane Trust, a local conservation group, explains.
The reason why they are in the Central Platte Valley is it's a wide braided channel with safety to roost at night in. But during the daytime when they feed, the wet meadow complex, the wet meadows along the Platte River are, you know, the prairie holds vital invertebrates. That's where they get all of their protein and calcium for the health of themselves and egg development.
And they get their carbs from waste grain in the cornfields. The cranes have long, delicate legs and a wide wingspan. They're gray with a red cap on their heads. They chirp and croak and rattle. One of the best times to watch them is when they fly back to the river at sunset to roost. Chris Helzer of Nebraska's Nature Conservancy describes the show.
As they come out of the sky in the evening, as they drop to the river, I've heard them described in a lot of different ways. My favorite is that they look like a dandelion seed sort of falling gently into the river. So they've got those long legs dangling underneath their wings that are spread out, and they just sort of glide and fall gently to the river.
People often huddle behind plywood bird blinds to watch the cranes to avoid disturbing them. Visitors are banned from approaching the birds, honking car horns, or flashing lights at them. If the cranes are startled into flight, they use up precious energy they need to continue their journey. At sunrise, after standing in the river all night, the cranes put on another show. It's a dance.
And so that sun pops out, things start to warm up, and you can just see them all sort of start moving, and then you see this sort of ripple of nervous energy through the flock, and they'll start hopping just a little bit and hopping just a little bit more, and then all of a sudden they're jumping full height and flapping their wings and dipping that head, and the morning has started, basically.
Later, thousands of birds will launch themselves skyward in a roar of wings flapping, off to the day's foraging, or the next stop on their journey north. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.